MTV, with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani, the revolution is being televised.
Hello, welcome to day three of our ongoing coverage of the Oklahoma City bombing cover-up. I'm Lisa Giuliani, and I welcome you and thank you for tuning in.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wayne TV. Before we get started today, we just have to tell you about a little bit of scrambling we did before the show. Our router went out, so we're ripping wires out of one computer, running them behind, shoving them into another one. But luckily, we got things going. We're ready to roll. Also, we'd like to thank Mr. Jack Blood from the RBN Radio Network. He had us on his show last night and gave a lot more coverage to the Oklahoma City bombing, so thank you very much to him. Mm-hmm. Now, our two guests today are Brigadier General Benton K. Parton and also 12-year Oklahoma State Representative Charles Key. The first guest is Mr. Parton, and I could spend 5 minutes telling you everything that's covered in his resume. It's that impressive. Mm-hmm. But instead, I'll simply say he spent 31 years of active duty in the United States Air Force, and also he is the premier expert on weapon system. In other words, he is the expert's experts when somebody needs this kind of information, so he knows what he's talking about. Mr. Parton, welcome to Wing TV.
Welcome.
My pleasure being on your program.
Okay, we have a lot to cover today, so I'm going to start off with this quote. It's from a man named Sam Cohen, who spent 40 years in nuclear weaponry and also worked on the Manhattan Project. He said, right after the Oklahoma City bombing, "I believe demolition charges in the building replaced a certain key concrete columns and did the primary damage to the Murrah Federal Building. It was absolutely impossible and against the laws of nature for a fertilizer and fuel oil bomb to bring that building down." Please comment.
Well, that was his comment in response to the report that I had prepared, which is really a detailed analysis of what really happened down there. It was a technical analysis, and Sam Cohen's confirmed that. I've known Sam Cohen a long time, and he's a great guy.
The government's official scenario says the Ryder truck was parked in a certain position and certain columns came down, but it doesn't really jive, especially with regard to your bomb analysis report, which clearly refutes the Justice Department's conclusions. So
the bomb position of the truck out in the street, where it was relative to the columns, I think the FBI's comment and their reports have been fairly consistent and fairly accurate. But the problem is that amount of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil, what you call ANFO, could not bring the building down the way they said that it did. The damage to the building was very asymmetrical. The maximum damage was not adjacent to the truck, and you had columns that were coming down, the bigger columns and smaller columns closer in. There were gross asymmetries and just technical impossibilities with respect to what happened. You can't bring down a small column way close in and leave a big one further out.
Right.
It just is not technically possible, because the bomb going off like that is going to give you a fairly symmetrical pattern. The building was uniform. There were no load-bearing walls. It was all reinforced, poured in place kind of a structure.
Yeah.
And it was just asymmetrical with the placement of the truck in the crater in the ground where the truck was.
Now, in the months after the Oklahoma City bombing, the government upped the size of the ANFO bomb 3 different times, finally resulting in what they said was a 4,800-pound ANFO bomb. Now, my question is, how difficult, and this is very, very vital, how difficult is it to mix, transport, and ignite such a huge amount of ANFO that's contained in multiple containers?
Well, that's not a difficult thing to do. It's not difficult to pour and mix that amount. Depends on how many people you've got. Depends on how much time. How much time you've got. That technical aspect, I don't think is that much of a problem. As you know, that there was an authorized autobiography of McVeigh when he was in before his execution by 2 reporters from up in Buffalo, New York. And McVeigh was saying then that that it was a fuel, that the bomb was made out of a ammonium nitrate and fuel oil plus nitromethane. And that combination will give you about the equivalence of TNT. And that would have been up around 20 equivalents of 23,000 pounds of ANFO. But you do not have the crater size and diameter and damage. The crater does not represent that.
Right.
And so it's just another phony thing. There's been so much disinformation, and I dare say that some of the government reports have contributed to that disinformation.
How would you compare the explosive strength of an open-air bomb versus a direct impact bomb, sir?
Well, a bomb out in the open, your blast wave is moving through the air, and the only damage you can couple into those heavy reinforced concrete columns is from the blast damage propagated through air. And it falls off inversely proportional to the cube of the distance.
Mm-hmm.
So where the bomb was 4,800 pounds of ammonium nitrate, if you want to use those figures, the highest pressure any place on the building saw was about 350 pounds per square inch, which is not enough to give you Broussard's damage. And the government was claiming that the column closest to the truck was brought down by Broussard's, which comes from having explosive in contact with the concrete, where you have a wave of deformation that moves through the concrete. Something on the order of 1 million pounds per square inch.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have the explosive up against the concrete, it doesn't take too much too much explosive to really destroy a column. But this was way out in the street being propagated through air.
Through air, yeah.
And the thing is, the transfer beam right across the top of the closest column to them, to the truck, was about almost the same distance as the column. And clear pictures show the bottom of the transfer beam across there with no Broussard's damage, which was sitting on the column that was supposed to have been totally destroyed by Broussard's damage.
Now, I asked my previous question because the government says that Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols mixed this ANFO mixture the morning before the Oklahoma City bombing. So what would happen to this mixture if it sat for 24 hours, and how effective would it be after that time?
Well, it could be stirred up. That's not going to change that much, but there are witnesses who testified to seeing McVeigh and others around there the night before. So if the mixture of nitromethane, of ammonium nitrate and fuel oil had been within the ballpark of getting the explosion out of it, it still would not have been able to do the job that they claimed that it did. It's just
right.
Technically impossible. And there's all kinds of photographic witness that shows Broussard's damage at junctures there on the third floor.
Okay.
Of columns with the in the structure.
All right.
So,
in the
irrespective of the explosive, if they've been perfectly mixed and just placed there in perfectly pristine condition with exact proportions, it still would not have done what happened to the Barmera building.
Okay, in the 25-year period prior to the OKC bombing, we didn't hear anything about ANFO bombs. But in early 1994, BATF and Army Corps of Engineers began ANFO tests at White Sands Missile Range in New Mexico under the code name Dipole Mite. Curiously, one of the people involved in that testing was Agent Harry Everhart, and he also happened to show up on the scene at the OKC bombing. Is this too much of a coincidence for you?
No, it isn't. Look, if you look at all the evidence out there, there were many people involved in the bombing in Oklahoma. The Middle Easterners were involved in Whitney, and that was ferreted out within the very, very first week. But they always kept the story out. It was done by who? One lone McVeigh.
Right.
And it's phony. The precedent was sort of built up to blame it on a militia guy, because you had the Weaver case out in Ruby Ridge.
Right.
They tried to blame this on a militia, where he was sort of in a trap position. And you had the Waco thing, and they're trying to blame that on militia people with guns and stuff. And then when you had the Ruby Ridge instance and the Waco incident really generated the militia movement in this country, exactly, because people saw the government doing things that were unconstitutional.
Right. Yeah. Well, General Parton, if we could rebuild the Alfred P. Murrah building, and if we could put a Ryder truck exactly where it was that morning with 4,800 pounds of ANFO in it, and we set it off, how much damage would it actually do to the building?
You would have taken out some of the flooring on the first floor and probably a little bit on the third floor, and that's about it.
That's it. Very good.
Yeah, the flooring was 6 inches thick. It was a fairly low, well, it was 100 pounds per square foot or something like that, but it was a fairly low flooring weight. For example, the Trade Center bombing in New York in 1993, when they set off a truck bomb in there, the flooring was 12 inches thick.
Uh-huh.
So the flooring in the Murrah building was fairly thin and flimsy compared to the Trade Center in New York.
So it wouldn't have done nearly the extensive damage, though, that we saw.
Well, the Trade Center in New York, when the bomb went off, the truck bomb in the Trade Center, it took out the flooring above the truck, two floors up and three floors down, around one column.
Yeah.
There was that one column was still standing there with all the concrete and attachments and stuff stripped away from it, about, what, six stories high.
Yeah. I'd like you to address the seismographic data with relation to the OKC bombing and how the government version doesn't seem to be consistent with that as well.
Well, the seismic information, I think, was accurate. It shows there was additional explosives. If you correlate the, I think most interesting thing is to correlate the seismographic timing with people in the building.
Mm-hmm.
Because people in the building, witnesses have testified that they thought they were having an earthquake.
Right.
From charges going off in the building, they thought they were having an earthquake, and the building was shaking and rolling.
Yeah.
And then you had the big blast when all the flying glass flew through the window from the bomb outside the building.
Yeah.
If you look at the timing there, it's about the same as the timing that they showed on the seismic information.
General Parton, why weren't you allowed to testify in the various trials for Oklahoma?
Well, I testified in the Oklahoma County Grand Jury trial a whole day.
Uh-huh.
And they listened to what I had to say, and I thought I had a fairly good hearing. But when you look at the composition of the grand jury, some of the people on there, appeared not to be a random selection. You had some key players who were on that grand jury.
Right.
I was told I was going to be called for, well, I wasn't told I was going to be called, but I know that Jones had me scheduled to go to the trial in Denver, and they prepared you the technical information for me to testify as a qualified witness, a technical expert. And I asked the Jones's office when they were setting up the paperwork, I said, I have a lot of things on my schedule. When would I expect to be called if I am called for the trial in Denver? And his assistant said, well, whether you're called or not depends upon what the prosecution says and does.
Yeah.
Okay,
I knew
I'd
then
like
they were not going
to
call me.
I'd like to
That's
ask
a
you
stupid
this, sir.
Thing.
Okay.
Why would you depend on what the prosecution says and does as to whether you called a witness or not?
Right.
Yesterday,
I was not called. I did not expect to be called. I knew it was just too much of a cover-up. And the one spokesperson they had out there for the FBI, he's turned out a new book with some other people. John Ursley. It's a fairly new book. I don't know if you've seen it. The Simple Truths. Simple Truths by John Hersey, Larrell Tongade, and Bob Burke. I think they're all former FBI people.
Okay, General Parton.
It's just the FBI line all the way through.
All right. Yesterday we did a radio interview with Jack Blood, and we discussed OKC, and someone called in and asked, why is the OKC bombing still important 10 years later? Well, from our vantage point, we believe that if it can be proven that bombs went off at OKC, it would lend credence to the theory that bombs went off on 9/11 at the World Trade Center towers. What's
your take on this? Well, I don't know that necessarily follows that information about what happened before the 911 event.
At least it would lay a premise, though, that the government is able to do something like this.
Well, there are a lot of things that happen because you get bad people involved in high places and doing bad things. Look, if you look at who in the United States would be getting a security clearance that would be most critical, most critical positions for granting and maintaining proper security. And I would wager that two of those positions would be the people in the counterterrorism, counterintelligence office in the FBI and the counterintelligence office in the CIA.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably more critical than most anybody else, unless you're talking about an elected president or something like that.
Right. And these would, we have and, to
But
go.
You look at the record, and here you had a proven Soviet agent, Hansen and one, and I forget the guy's name over in the CIA.
Well, General Parton, we have to call Mr. Key right now.
Okay.
But we just wanted to thank you so much. Taking time out, and you've been very, very helpful in exposing more of the information about this case. So keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that's interesting. I'd like to talk to him a bit more.
Well, I think we have him scheduled for March, I believe.
It's not out of the realm of possibility that the CIA is involved in this.
Oh, by all means, yeah. Okay.
Mr. Key is also a very interesting person and an integral figure in this investigative committee.
We're trying to get through to his line now.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, it's not going through. We'll try again here.
But we do believe there are similarities between the Oklahoma City bombing and what happened on 9/11. And the more we learn about OKC, we believe the more we'll learn about 9/11.
Right. And we think it's very much that if OKC has proven that there were bombs...
Charles Key.
Hey, Mr. Key, it's Victor and Lisa from Wing TV.
Hi, Victor. How are you?
Good, real good.
Hi, Mr. Key.
We just got off the phone with General Parton. We're running out of time here, so we just want to let everyone know that Charles Key spent 12 years in Oklahoma City State House as a representative, and he was the only one in that house that wanted to bring forth this case on Oklahoma City. So to start things off, we're trying to cover as many angles as possible about the Oklahoma City bombing. My first question to you is, the central figure, or one of the central figures in his case, was a man named Andreas Strassmeier, who was a German that had ties to both the German and American intelligence. What role did he play in not only the Alfred P. Murrah bombing, but also handling Timothy McVeigh?
Well, it's believed by most everyone that's looked into this case for some time that Strassmeier was some type of a informant or undercover agent, and working with the knowledge of our government, maybe for our government, and maybe with the knowledge of the West German government.
Uh-huh.
And what really sticks out is the fact that he was inside Elohim City, the Eastern Oklahoma organization that was a Christian Identity group, and has been documented as saying, we need to start blowing up government buildings and assassinating politicians and creating mass shootings. And in spite of that, and then after the Oklahoma City bombing, that was just prior to Oklahoma City bombing, after the Oklahoma City bombing, they did not ever take him into custody for questioning or for any other reason. They let him stay in this country and then leave the country several months later.
Incredible.
That speaks volumes right there.
Right.
We were just discussing.
Was in contact with him. He and McVeigh had met together. He had been given special treatment by political and military authorities here in this country while he was here, and obviously he had a role to play with Timothy McVeigh in the Oklahoma City bombing.
Okay, we were just discussing the similarities between Oklahoma City bombing and 9/11, and there was the same mode of evidence removal by controlled demolition, the same FEMA director, Gene Corley, and then we had this mass fear inducement and Patriot Act type legislation, Big Brother type legislation following. So what's your take on all this? Are there similarities?
Absolutely, there are similarities. It seems like a template that continues to be used. And, the bottom line is the American people better wake up and start requiring explanations and something to be done about the way government agencies are handling these cases, and in the Congress is just going along and passing new laws that take away and restrict our constitutional rights and freedoms. So, you know, it ought to be a wake-up call for most Americans. I get the sense that a lot of people are waking up, but I don't know if they're waking up in the numbers and quick enough to make a difference. Time will tell.
Right. Now, in my research of this case, I've come across eyewitness statements saying that people posing as GSA employees were seen strapping C4 explosives to columns inside the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building. How much do you feel this is an accurate statement?
Well, I believe it's at least, at the very minimum, it's accurate that there were people that were highly suspicious that were doing something in that parking garage that was basically underneath the Murrah Building, or a large portion of it, and they were doing things there. They were seen by many witnesses, mm-hmm. So the question of whether or not there were really people there is not really an issue. There were people there. Exactly what they were doing is the question. We went to great lengths in our investigation to try to find if there were any people that worked for utility companies or construction companies that were in that building doing any kind of work in the days before the bombing. We could not find any. But some of the things that were described by these witnesses that these men and these individuals were doing were highly suspicious, because it looked like they were doing more than, you know, maybe fixing a parking gate or something like that.
Yeah,
they were working on the columns. It clearly appeared by the witnesses' accounts.
When we look at the Oklahoma City bombing, and we see the extent of the damage that happened, it appears that total collapse was the objective, not just partial destruction. In light of that, do the unexploded ordinances lend credence to this line of reasoning?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's another thing that's well documented. Of course, in spite of all the attempts to cover up and lie about the facts that the officials with the FBI and Justice Department that handled this case have tried to do, the evidence that there were other explosive devices found is very clear and you know, uncontrovertible. So there were other explosive devices that were intentionally placed in that building. Somebody put it in there for a reason, and they obviously meant to do much more damage and bring that whole building down.
Yeah. Now, we touched upon already Elohim City, which was kind of like a sin city, or a who's who for militia members, anti-government people, patriots. And years later, we found out that it had been infiltrated right from the start, all the way up to the head, a guy named Robert Miller, who was the founder of Elohim City. Were these members, especially Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols, were they merely patsies who took the rap for an act that had been planned and used to further the aims and the agenda of the government?
Well, I agree with many others, including Timothy McVeigh's own defense attorney, who says that McVeigh was by no means the mastermind, or Terry Nichols, mastermind behind this case. There were other people that it's been referred to as an evil genius or geniuses that were behind this, putting it all together. One thing about Elohim City, as we went through our investigation for the years after the bombing, it almost became a joke. If the tragedy wasn't so great, it would have been a joke. That in Elohim City, it seemed to be that there were more undercover type agents and what have you than there were actual true believers.
Right.
I'd like you to elaborate on the distortions and complete disregard to eyewitness accounts and the criminal alteration of the FBI's 302 witness statements.
Well, this is one thing that, as people look at this case, and this is one of the things that I really try to hammer on and draw the clear picture for people to see, that there aren't accidental mistakes or differences in opinion in this case when it comes to the FBI not believing eyewitness accounts. This is intentional on the FBI and Justice Department's part to try to totally eliminate any witnesses to the Oklahoma City bombing case. To make the point, when the Justice Department brought charges against Timothy McVeigh at the El Reno Federal Penitentiary several days after the bombing, their whole case was based every one of those witnesses saw McVeigh, and at least one other person. Some saw more than one person, as people will learn and find out as they look at this case. There was always one or multiple persons with McVeigh. As time went by, they have denied that those witnesses saw what they saw. But you can't have it both ways.
Right.
You can't bring charges and convict somebody with those witnesses and at the same time say they're not credible and they didn't see what they saw.
Now, some of the most eye-opening information in this case is contained on this tape right here. I'm holding up. It's called Oklahoma City, What Really Happened. And there's raw news footage, quite a bit of it, from the local news stations, the TV news stations, saying over and over again how the bomb squad are removing unexploded bombs from inside the Murrah Federal Building. Then, all of a sudden, boom, the national media steps in, and they have a whole new cover story that says nothing whatsoever about that. My question to you is, how does the local media respond to these contradictions?
Well, it's unfortunate, but it seems like most people, whether they be media or, you know, regular folks, are afraid of the government, and they'll just fall in line and do what they think is in their best interest, acting out of fear. So the local media, with a few exceptions, has done the same thing. But on the case of the other explosive devices being found, if it were a matter of the press just simply reporting something and it's spreading, even in assuming it was bad and wrong information, that would be one thing, but that's not the case. We have numerous witnesses, and some are on that tape that you just mentioned, who were medical personnel that were in the triage center, and law enforcement people, paramedics that were on site that had conversations with federal and local law enforcement individuals who were telling them in very specific detail about the explosive devices they had just taken out of the Murrah Building. So it's not a matter of a misreporting by the media and then everybody jumps on the story and continues to report wrong information.
This whole story was just changed.
We have medical and law enforcement people who have put their own careers and their own names on the line by telling very specific information that they were told by law enforcement authorities.
Okay, dozens of reputable individuals have come forward and said that the Oklahoma City bombing was a government inside job. So what is the next step to prove this in a court of law, sir?
Well, I think the next step that may be getting ready to be taken is going to be to do what the late Glenn Wilburn wanted to do, and many of us have wanted to do for a long time, and that is to go to Congress, the U.S. Senate, and have hearings there in Congress. There is a law, in addition to that, there is currently a lawsuit that's in play that's related to the Oklahoma City bombing directly that's in the Washington, D.C. Circuit Court, and there still yet is being pursued additional lawsuits that may even be directly filed against the government or government agencies or individuals within the agencies.
That's excellent news.
Well, Mr. Key, we want to say to you and to everybody out there watching right now, this man is a hero. This man has kept this case alive. I know how much work he's done on it and how admirable his efforts are. And I just can't
say
enough.
We just want to say that you're doing a great service not only to the people of Oklahoma City and to the memory of those lost, but to the people of this nation. And we thank you very much.
We very much
thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. I appreciate it.
And thank you. And we'll be back tomorrow with our final show. We're going to have on Hoppy Heidelberg and another guest also. And just keep tuning in, folks. This is such valuable, vital information. And everybody who's appeared on our show should be congratulated immensely because they're sticking their necks out and they're trying to
bring out
the truth.
Check out their final report. We now have it available on the Wing TV website. We urge everyone to take a look at it.
All right. And we'll be back tomorrow. Keep your eyes open, folks. There's a lot going on.
See you.